David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 391. The march to episode 400 begins. Hup, hup. I'm your host.
End of episode 400.
Have we been good about following the numbering, or have we had a lot of point B-E-Y episodes?
Yeah, there were a couple way back when, but I think those would be additional. So our 400 will be... a quality earned 400. I'm your host, Steve Raker, here in the Comic Book Bunker, along with, thanks to the magic of podcasting, you can hear both WWX Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbit are here. We are still using our old message board names, aren't we? Like 15 plus years later.
Yes, forever.
Marvel Noise is the semi-monthly podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. One time, the only Marvel-centric podcast out there, which says both a lot about the early days of podcasting and the state of Marvel at that time. Our scope is all things Marvel, with a particular fondness for and fascination with the Bronze Age. You can find, listen to, stream, and download episodes past and present over on MarvelNoise.com and get new episode announcements, give us feedback, and see images and cover galleries on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Also, find other fine podcasts from our host with the Donnie Most, Derek Howard and his Deliberate Noise Network. Amongst those podcasts include Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show where we talk indie comics that hit its 500 milestone recently.
That has more undeliberate noise on it.
True that. Also, the Baltimore Comic Con is back. They've been a longtime friend of the show, and that con is just comic-centered. It's the type of con you wish cons were, full of fantastic guests and artists. One big artist's alley. Attached to another artist alley. And it's back at the Baltimore Convention Center in the Inner Harbor Tourist Trap Zone of Baltimore for 2022 on October 21, 22, and 23.
It's a trap.
The guest list is huge. A lot of folks who haven't been there before or in, you know, like a decade. Like Liam Sharp is going to be there and... Dan Brereton, who I haven't met, but done all his Kickstarters the last several years. It'll be fun to meet those guys. All right, we couldn't cram in all our recent reads and new number ones into last episode without making it even more giant-sized than it already was. So we're here with more of that.
King-sized. Super-sized.
Summer special.
Exactly. Bi-weekly.
No, that's next time. Next episode. Promise.
Summer event.
All right, I got a comic I read, just a quick one to get the ball rolling, is the 12th issue of the latest Eternals series. The Kieran Gillen, Asad Ribic one.
That's a good one.
It's taken, like, I think I figured out, like 17 months for the 12 issues to come out. So it wasn't just my imagination that this thing, you know, wasn't really like rolling like a freight train with momentum.
Well, they had those one-shots in between as well.
But those don't count. They weren't like the story. But this issue was a finale to this 12-issue-long Thanos-related arc that ends with the Avengers and... fighting the Eternals, and the whole thing also served as it ends as a prequel to this Judgment Day event that's going to feature the Avengers, the X-Men, and the Eternals. Sorry, Spidey, you're out.
Well, he's a non-mutant superhero.
Everyone's
You know,
favorite
call me
non-mutant.
crazy. Someone might say, "Oh, it's like an Avengers versus X-Men thing," but just adding the Eternals and their like high conceptness, like that makes me excited.
Yeah, in some ways it makes sense because the whole thing of the deviants and they really push the whole they're supposed to stop deviant mutation angle of their existence. So if you can convince them that that's what the X-Men are, there you go.
Well, not just that, but I feel like over time, not that the property has been touched a lot, but there has been the idea of, even in the original series with Carcass, that guy, that maybe the deviants aren't all bad and it's not this black and white thing. And that puts them as a metaphor for the mutants in the Marvel U, anyways. You know what I mean? So they seem a natural alignment. As they got away from the idea that, hey, not all the deviants are bad.
Yep. But it was a weird arc. There were aspects of it I enjoyed and aspects of it where I felt like there wasn't adequate characterization that really was sticking to the characters. And I felt like, part of it I think was sort of the stiff artwork of Ribic, who's, does wonderful stuff with his color and painting and his compositions and stuff, but for I don't know, for this story, it felt like I felt like there were at times things were kind of stiff, but overall, it was interesting to finally see them do more with the Thanos connection. It was kind of just a matter of time, right?
Not enough prober, right, Steve?
Yeah. All right, what else you guys got?
Well, bleeding right into that is the Free Comic Book Day, Judgment Day,
Nice.
which has like a whole setup thing. But it also has some other stories in here too. Like, hey, do you remember that Blade comic that was supposed to come out a few years ago? So it's just kind of funny that there's like other stuff in here like that, and you're just like, oh yeah. Like that might be interesting. Or then I thought it was a bit wild how this other like you sort of get like a Mary Jane story, right?
Yeah.
And then the way that ends, I'm just like, wait, what? Let's get to the Hellfire Gala. Year two.
I can't
I
believe
like that
we're
they put the Free Comic Book Day most of it online. They don't they have the they did not put the Marvel Voices one yet, but you can get the Spider-Man and Venom, Avengers and X-Men, and the Kitty one.
I saw the voices on there.
Well, the link is busted on the one that they're linking it to from their site. Now, maybe they have it, but on the, I will admit, with the Marvel Unlimited thing, sometimes links work online that don't work on my tablet, and vice versa. So I might have been looking at it on the wrong device. They really haven't. I mean, it works mostly, but I will say it might be my tech because my tablet seems to fight, and then sometimes my desktop fights with it.
I was going to say that sometimes when they're putting up the weekly books, they appear on the tablet earlier than they do on the website. It'll say it's available, and then you like click through on the computer, and it's like, what? It's not there yet. And then I'm like, oh well, I guess I'm going to a tablet to read this thing.
Yeah,
It's
it's just,
strange.
yeah, it's weird. Like I said, might be Andy. I'm not the greatest tech guy, but you can at least get some of the stuff on the desktop and or the tablet if you have your Marvel Unlimited. So I read the Avengers X-Men and the Spider-Man one. I did not read the Kitty Spidey. I tried watching the cartoon, and it just really pitched for little kids.
Yeah, I don't think you're the target audience for that one.
But I remember the original Amazing Friends.
That Amazing Friends is so strange though.
When the
Like I've
couch.
watched it and everything, it's just
I know you don't like it, Kevin, because he's the Beatle and he doesn't turn into Mach 3 or whatever, but.
can turn into Mach 1. I mean, Superhero Squad had Screaming Mimi turn into Songbird. That was cool. Yeah, I was less thrilled with the Spider-Man in Venom 1 compared to the Judgment Day 1. Like
Agreed.
I don't know, like it I guess there's like echoes of like but it was much better Daredevil fighting a vacuum than Spider-Man fighting a mailbox. Like I don't know. It's just if you enjoy that kind of wackiness, like maybe you'd be all over that, but you know, I wasn't so much digging like that type of thing.
Well, also, was Hannah always his anchor? Or is that like
Not.
a new thing? I was trying to, I forgot, I meant to look that up, and then I was like,
It's not new, but it's not always. I mean, JR's been around for a long time,
Yeah.
but Hannah inked a lot of JR's stuff on his last time he was doing Spider-Man, but he took over after Klaus Janson was doing J inks over JR.
Because I didn't know if maybe JR had just changed up a little bit. Because it's been a long time since I've read his stuff on the regular. I mean, he did that stint for the Distinguished Competition, and I read a few issues, and I know he's been back to Marvel, but I don't know. I felt like it wasn't bad. It just felt different. Like you could see it's JRJR, but it just felt a little different too. I don't know if maybe he's. People change up their styles a little or whatever, or if it was Scott Hanner, if you guys were like, nope, it looks like regular JRJR to me. Crazy.
Did you read the first Spider-Man issue? I
Just
did.
this free comic book day thing. I didn't buy the new series, no.
What'd you think of the first issue, Kevin? That's the it's written
You
by.
want to jump to the first issue right away?
Yeah, well, it would be
I'll just
hard to.
mention that the Venom story is, it seems just, it's a Venom story. I mean, there's Venom symbiotes and a lot of Venom stuff, and then I'm like, I guess we're going to do more Venom stuff. I'm like, I don't know. It is
Yeah,
what it is.
you gotta. I mean, right? They've built a lot of expectation and put a lot of tension on the character in recent years, but like we've come off of so many good and interesting and intriguing takes on Venom recently by multiple creative teams too. It wasn't just like one guy thing that I mean there needs to be a reset button for new people to jump onto it in some way, and I don't know. There has to be a valley after a peak, right? That's just the way these waves go.
Yeah. And
I know it. I know the symbol doesn't match, but come on, that guy looks like Green Lantern Venom, doesn't he? With
Yeah,
the circle and everything.
but yeah, I have caught up on the Venom series, and it's not bad, but I'm not really digging it after I'm kind of in Venom withdrawal after doing so much and having it hit the big peak, and I'm not as interested in the fallout, it seems.
It feels like Hulk has sort of done that type of thing too, and it's like, how could it not? Like, you don't want to follow Immortal Hulk. Like, whoever
Right.
follows that,
Right.
it's just impossible.
Yep.
I kind of feel like later on, like years later, you're like, oh yeah, that other run was good, but in the moment after, like, and people are like, yeah, but it was this guy and this guy. I'm like, yeah, they're good, but. I don't know. He's like, you need some time or something. I don't know.
Well,
And they're not going to take time because, like, they're going to want to put out more Hulk books. So, I mean,
remember Paul Jenkins having to take over after Peter David? I mean,
yeah,
some of those
it's,
were good books, but it was
yeah.
that's a hard, sled to slide on.
Yeah,
Oh my
unless
God,
you're
I
like
have that
really
on.
into the other guy or you've been waiting, like Mortal Hulk wasn't your thing, then you're gonna feel that bump. But otherwise, everyone else is kind of feeling a little sluggish.
I really was going to talk about the new Hulk series. It just finished its first arc. I'm really liking it. So,
All right. Well, that's cool.
I'm in the minority there. But anyways, go on, Kevin, about Spider-Man number one.
I wanna hit that first. Then let's come back to Hulk.
And then we'll come back to Free Comic Book Day as well.
All right, if we must. So, The Amazing Spider-Man, though, that's the it's Zeb Wells, right?
Yeah,
Writing.
but that's the thing. I look at that. I look at the creators. I'm like, this is gonna be good.
Yeah. But
And it's not like I was big on Nick Spencer or anything, but
why is
I think
Peter
his first issue had more excitement than this first issue.
and why is Peter like a jerk? Like, why
Well,
he went from everyman
this is
to
a
like.
function of the story doing the 6 month later type
Yeah,
of technique
I
where I'm just
dislike
like,
that.
I'm just going with it because I'm like, I don't know, I guess they'll explain it. But and there are mysteries, but I feel like none of them are, they don't leave me jazzed. I'm just like, I guess I gotta just trust the writer and go along with it. I'm like,
It's like someday you're gonna have to find out like how he wronged the people around him. Like, that's not
yeah,
fun.
I know. I'm like, okay. I'm like, I guess he, I don't know. Like something bad happened to him or something. He went to therapy and then he found out other people in therapy and then he killed someone and he hid the body and went back in time. Like, I don't know what's gonna happen.
Gosh.
It's funny when you look at the Marvel paper stock though, because this Amazing Spider-Man, it reminds me of like the Ultimate Spider-Man paper stock. Like you have the thick cover and it totally does not match the paper stock on like other books get the super thin paper stock, and this obviously, I don't know if it's because of the more pages, but obviously not the same paper stock as other Marvel books.
I wonder if it's just for the number one because I knew they were going to print a lot of, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just weird. They gave it the heavier stuff, so I was like, that's fine with me because I don't know, some of the stuff gets rather thin. So I mean,
I was feeling like it was nice to step back into the visual world of Romita Jr. doing Spidey, and he obviously was excited about it because it's like a pretty tight artwork for. It's still in his style, but he had
yeah.
gotten pretty loose on his last tour of duty, and this is pretty tight. But I wasn't really digging the story, so I'll give it a chance, and we'll see where it goes. If anything, it'll be fun to, throw rotten fruit at.
Yeah, I mean, it was an average story. I'm like, I like seeing a bunch of crime bosses meeting, and then I'm like, where's what's his name, or why is White Rabbit there, or whatever, you know? I mean, this digger guy though, I had to look up who he was. I'm like, I didn't know who he was, so I mean, that was kind of funny. And then like the whole I like Tombstone. I mean, he's probably I don't know if I would say he was A-list, but he's pretty high up there. And then they promise like, oh, we're gonna do like one of those epic Tombstone stories, like the Spectacular Spider-Man. I'm like, that's cool, but I mean, we're just building, and it looks like he got a haircut or something.
How'd that go?
I know, right?
With like a grinder? I mean, what? It's funny because Tombstone and that Spectacular Spider-Man story with the whole Robbie Robertson, what was, I guess, trial and all that stuff, happened while I was out of comics. So when I came
Oh.
back to comics, I read it in hindsight. But at first, I was like, "Who's this Tombstone guy?" And like, why bother when Hammerhead already exists? Like, that still bothers me to this day. That it's like he just seems like another Hammerhead. Like, but that story
See,
was good, the Robbie Robertson one.
yeah, like that's the thing. Like, you always have these like grudges, or you're like, oh, what about that? But when you're coming in as a new reader, you're like, they're on the same level to you, and they just seem different characters. But like, older readers are like, oh, I don't know about this guy. That's funny. That's always funny. That's why I always wonder about Ben Reilly too. I mean, I guess maybe the guy that does the tattoos on Colossus, you know, maybe he has a very specialized clientele.
With his diamond cutting tool.
Yes.
All right, Hulk, the Hulk series, Andrew.
Long-time listeners know I decided to purchase a fun subscription to this.
Oh, that's right.
So now I get the issues in a plastic bag with a cardboard holder. Okay, look, like spine dings and corner dings abound. So if you're like real strict on that, don't do it. But the mailman did not fold, spindle, or mutilate them.
That's good.
So I was pleased with that. The first six issues have hit. It is basically Donny Cates, Ryan Ottley, Frank Martin on all the issues. Then, starting with issue two, they added an inker, Cliff Rathburn. I did not notice any big change.
Yeah.
I feel like Ryan Ottley's really laying down either enough pencils that he knows to follow it or not. So it's not like I suddenly was like, whoa, what happened with issue two or whatever.
Yeah, his pencils are very finished.
So
isn't there the Walking Dead connection there?
I don't know.
I don't know. I thought Ryan Ottley was invincible.
Oh, maybe that's... I feel like they've... Or is that just the Kirkman? I'm confusing the Kirkman stuff. I feel like they've worked somewhere. Maybe not.
They could have. I mean, obviously, Ryan Ottley did a lot of Invincible work. That title was a Kirkman book from Image wrapped up, I don't know, what, 5 years ago, guys? Something like that.
Yeah.
Now it's a cartoon on Amazon Prime, but we're back to Marvel. But anyway, so this is sending, as you guys noted, like we need a change of status quo. No one wants to pick up the reins writing the same, like the same playground. Like that would be a mistake. So here they're sending Bruce Banner has now treats the Hulk like a spaceship almost, and he takes him off. And the cool, interesting idea is he keeps the Hulk persona trapped as an engine for the machine, and each level is a different level of threat to the Hulk so he can increase the power. So they have fun like demonstrating each level. Like one level is, you know, just standard army, and then it kicks it up to your super villains, and then superheroes, and then demons, and then gods, and all these. Yeah. So issue two has giant size Wolverine. So they have these segments of fighting that are, you know, the Hulk character is fighting like a 400 foot tall Wolverine and like rips his claw. And it's the old yellow and blue Wolverine, and like rips his claws out and puts it through his eye and kills him. And because, you know, this is all using to power the Hulk to power the thing.
Yeah, once you wrap your head around what's happening, it's clever and very fun, because at any time you can insert, you know, just for a feat of strength, even if it's not a combat situation, you can add in an action sequence to power that act of strength too. You know what I mean? So you can throw in, you know, it's the equivalent of, I think of it as almost like it's a mech, the Hulk, that he's like a giant mech suit, and Banner's the pilot. And then when, you know, you need to, you know, crush something with the hydraulic arm of the mech, it's like down in the engine room, you know, they gotta, you know, get the turbines going and stuff. And that's what's happening with the Hulk fighting things. You know, it's all in his head, so to speak, but it's the rage that's driving the machine. It's very fun and very action packed and very different.
Yeah, I really like
this is something you would do to keep like if an artist gave you like a list of, hey, I want to draw all these things, and how am I going to integrate all this stuff into a book? I mean, this is one way to do it.
Yeah, for sure. You can throw anybody in at any time.
Yeah, keep things exciting.
And so for me, it was a real nice, fun, it takes some of the bombastic, exciting visuals of comics, and it has this weird underpinning about the relationship of Hulk to Banner, and can examine that if you want something more to chew on. But I'm more than happy to have the big, dumb, over-the-top punch-up part of it, too. So I feel like it's hopefully getting people who don't just want the punch up, but you know, Ottley, Martin, they create those images that are fun because of that extreme over the top, and they're dying, and like I said, body parts being ripped off and everything. But the Hulk ends up being sent to an alternate dimension where Bruce Banner unleashed the bomb but didn't get turned into the Hulk, but the world got destroyed, Thunderbolt Ross takes over and Banner's the one. And so you get to see irradiated, hulked out versions of those world, analogs like Spider-Man as the Hulk and those sorts of things, while our Hulk fights them in increasingly grotesque, over-the-top battles. They end up having a moment, that world's Bruce Banner facing that world's Thunderbolt Ross, which, you know, obviously our Bruce Banner has a relationship to his Thunderbolts Ross. In the spaceship mech portion, Bruce has created a Betty sort of AI system that turns the tables on him and sees what happens when you push this Hulk thing all the way to level 10 like we want, to see even more gruesome. So that also resolves in this first 6 issues. I mean, there'll be more of it, but I really feel like the 6 is like, we're going to see all 10 levels. We're going to look at these ideas about what Bruce Banner's relationship to the Hulk, and have a lot of cool punch up. So I thought it was fun. I mean, I do understand and tire sometimes of that kind of lockstep, like, here's our arc, and it's almost perfectly contained kind of business. But I thought it was well done and loads of fun. And some of that's influenced, no doubt, by the excitement of going to my mail once a month and getting a beat up comic book in it.
I think the art also had to be a little tighter as far as not wanting too many dangling threads going forward, is that it had this crossover with Thor that's about to happen, or in the process of happening now in the next few issues, that they sort of had to get their new status quo established before they upset the apple cart, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure, because that they're teasing heavily that 7 is going to be that Thor crossover. So I liked... I don't know. I just thought this is how you handle coming off a celebrated run. You put top-notch people on it. Like I said, Donny Cates has this beautiful way of, like, dumb comic book stuff, like the Punisher being Ghost Rider, or that independent book you and Kevin talked about with the, like, Tomahawk, whatever that, just crazy over-the-top comic book visuals, but some meat underneath it if you want to chew on that. Like, not just the dumb empty visuals, but there's some whatever the under there. It was Frank Castle's kind of how he created and his ideas of vengeance underpinning it as well. And so this is great. Ryan Ottley, I like him. I mean, if you don't like him, don't read these issues. but if you do, I would think, how could you not like this? This is excess. I mean, in Hulk books, isn't there an element of that kind of over-the-top Hulk smash we all want?
I want him walking absolutely away, sadly, though.
And there's some...
Poor Hulk. He just wants to be left alone.
I read the first issue of... I don't know how many issues it will be, because I have a feeling it's going to not come out very... in a very timely manner, and that is a new book by Rob Liefeld and company, a new Deadpool limited series, Bad Blood.
That's not the graphic novel by the same name?
It's not the same name.
Wasn't there one,
though,
or am I
no,
crazy?
There was a graphic novel, but it's not the same name.
Oh, okay.
That was a few years ago, back when they were still doing those little hardcover OGNs. But this is a 27-page first issue that, I mean, it's Liefeld, so it's light on story, heavy on action. It has Deadpool fighting this big, almost like Bane from Batman, but a little less human. It's called Thumper, and it gets into a whole mystery of Deadpool chasing down this weapon that exists and that's connected to his past. And every time he gets close, this Thumper dude shows up and is like the Guardian and roughs him up and knocks him off the trail. So this time around, he recruits Domino to be a ace in the hole as far as keeping the big guy busy and letting her work her quite literal magic or mutant power to maybe get a lead on what's happening. And it also relates to an old untold adventure of X-Force back when Domino was running with them back in the old Liefeld days there with Shatterstar and that kind of stuff and Cable. And when they crossed Deadpool's path when Deadpool was an adversary of theirs. So they go back in time and have some X-Force adventuring as well, which is a heck of a lot of fun. This is good Liefeld. It's really nicely rendered. There's some very nice explosive action scenes and bombastic Kirby-esque type poses. He does have his funky torsos that he does, but that's become almost trademarks of his at this point. But I found it to be a fun little nostalgic bounce through some of those Liefeld characters.
I mean, someday we're going to read through all of X-Force, right?
Ooh, that'd be fun.
Plans that we'll never do. That's a lot of issues.
I know I was reading his debut at the time, but I faded out pretty quick for my leaf. So when I revisit that 90s stuff, like, it's pretty crazy if you weren't in it at the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of, like, not just the crossovers, but some pretty bizarre visual, like the language of modern superhero comics in 93 was an interesting thing for some
titles.
So
many characters.
Yeah, lots of characters and lots of trying to invoke like manga-esque backgrounds rather than more detailed backgrounds. And
yeah, and then out of the blue, Mignola would show up and you'd be like, what?
But doing the manga-esque backgrounds and trying to play around with like panel shape and page design at the same time with having tons of characters sometime was a real crazy visual ride for sure.
Yeah.
I just hate, again, Andy personal pet peeve, the wrong way splash page that I felt rarely seemed to be justified when you're, I'm like, why am I turning my book to the side? Why aren't they? But it is funny with that panel design, how they would fit the anatomy to match the panel. And you're like, okay, you know, you could have made a different choice, but I see you want the character to fit into that panel, even though, you know,
I can
maybe
see
their legs aren't that long.
Yeah, I can see you don't want to draw feet by the way you cut that panel.
Don't you want to see Sienna blaze again, Andrew?
All that stuff has been mercifully blanked out due to time. I don't remember a lot of it. Like I said, certain panels, when I was rereading some of that Heroes Return or Reborn, that the famous Enchantress panel, her legs.
Oh,
were like...
yeah. That's the panel. Like, I can't really remember when... Like, I started noticing things and saying, hey, this artwork isn't what it used to be or whatever. But that Enchantress panel is, like, engraved in my memory of, huh, what is up?
Yeah, I just felt like clearly you're at a point where no one's telling you no anymore.
Yeah.
No, Rob, that looks great. All right, who's up next? Is that Kevin, me? I'm cutting anyone off.
I'll give you a run through of this Free Comic Book Day, Marvel Voices, which has a news story and a bunch of ones they culled from various one shots. And
look at it on my. You're right. It is on the online version. It's just not. I can't get it on my computer.
Yeah.
But I do. I did read it because I remember the Moon Girl when I looked at my tablet. That's bad on Andy.
So very much like an anthology thing where you like some stories better than others, like this the Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, highly enjoyable. I mean, I really dig that type of stuff. And then they finish it off with, I think it's like a Shark Girl type of thing. And then some of the other ones could be more of like a historical retrospective thing, so it's not so much a story. So I'm like, okay. So they have that double page spread too from Jeffrey Verhaeghe here, which is unreal. And I like really enjoy seeing some of that stuff too. So I mean, totally worthwhile to read this one. Some good stories, some good artwork. I'm sold.
Yeah, the only one that was free. Strange was the, I'm glad they say Bishop, because I did not recognize that Bishop. That one, I'm like, I guess he's got a new outfit or, but I picked up the Voices Identity number one, which came out. That's the continuation of this series, I guess. So I did get that one. Guys, I love when Marvel confuses me. So you know I had to jump all over the Spider-Man 2099 Exodus. Anytime they put in alpha issues, you know, I don't even understand. Is it because alpha sells as well as issue one, or like it's two issue? Like, I don't really get the alpha and the omega idea, except it must generate more sales.
I feel like this came out of the 90s. Like, if you want to do your event, like you don't want to do the whole six-issue limited series, and your main story is going to be happening in other books. So you need... Like, I mean, I guess you could release, like, that in the regular book, but, I mean, it is like a number one.
That is when I think it makes sense, is when it's going to be in a whole bunch of different titles, but they're trying to draw it together into one event that's happening across titles. So there's one alpha book that kicks it all off, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I was like, is this an event? As you guys know, I enjoy staying deliberately ignorant. So when I go to the shop, I really like, oh, what's this? What is this? What looks cool? That. So I grabbed it So we have the alpha and the number one have been out. Now, there is the other reason that might drive it is the art team, at least from alpha to one, changed up. But it was a Steve Orlando, Paul Fry, Niraj Menon, and for the art on the alpha. And the alpha, I feel like, I mean, I guess you could jump in number one, but the alpha really is a proper number one from my thinking. It sets up where we are. Spider-Man 2099 is back in his world, which I thought Secret Wars got rid of, but I guess he's back.
He can't go back to 2099 AD.
Or I guess Franklin Richards recreated this world at the end of Secret Wars. But anyways, we're back.
Wait, he was I thought he was recreating worlds, not recreating. Yeah. Was he recreating times too?
Yeah, I guess timeline worlds.
What was he recreating the past, like the past Marvel universes?
I don't know. I thought Spider-Man from the 2099, because we're in Nueva York and it's all the same. Now, I admittedly, as you guys know, we started 2099. I haven't finished any of those, so I don't know where it ended. We talked about Doom and read a few other books, so I'm collecting those, so maybe this was all explained how it was immune from the Secret Wars event from a decade ago.
But the last book that wrapped up all the stuff is apparently hard to find.
I believe that.
We'll ever. I mean, maybe Marvel Unlimited someday, but I think we're gonna have trouble at some point.
So the status quo in Nueva York is this cabal is the group of all powerful behind the scenes, even more powerful than the Alchemex and the corporations guys, if you can believe it.
Public Enemy.
I said shock to that. So he is tangling with the cabal, who, like I said, above the law, all that. And there's a giant explosion in Canada, Kevin. I don't know if you read this one, but did you like how they blew up Canada?
I mean, it's gonna be on the way, but why did they blame Canada again?
Oh, here it's not blaming. They just decided to blow it up, and you find out in the course of the next issue what that explosion is. But the cabal is doing all this crazy business, and he needs to find out why this giant explosion happened. And I think it's going to be a walk through the 2099 universe, because the alpha issue has a team up with Ghost Rider 2099
with the chainsaw hand.
This version is all digital, I guess. Again, another series I have some, but yes, he has the chainsaw hand, but he's like more of a computer guy, or he's not there a lot of the time. He can manifest or not manifest.
Bought that first issue, but I can't tell you anything from that issue. I have no memory of so I need to go back at some point.
It's a fun, colorful issue. I will be honest, some of the action sequences, maybe I just don't not familiar with the character's powers or whatever. There were times when he broke onto the scene, because basically the Cabal shock troopers find them, and there's a big fight with Spider-Man and Ghost Rider fighting them. And some of that was a little, I had to read a few times to figure out who's punching who, so to speak. And the Cabal shock troopers kill themselves rather than be captured. And I didn't quite understand. I'm like, why not just fight to the death instead? But whatever. And that's just to show how driven they are. Basically, the explosion was from the chest of a Celestial, and it created this big garden in Canada where the explosion is, and everyone's now going to race to find it. But the end of the Alpha issue has a big reveal about who the big bad is behind the Cabal. I'll not reveal it, but I was like, wah, who cares?
Wow.
Number one, I had to get Dave Wachter again. And Carlos Lopez on color. And this one is funny because Spider-Man 2099, despite being in the title, literally two pages. The setup is Ghost Rider and him are discussing they need to get help. And the help they need is the Winter Soldier 2099. Now, Kevin, did you buy Winter Soldier 2099 when it came out? Joke. Obviously, the Winter Soldier wasn't a character in the early 90s when it came out, but they're creating it here. So basically, the Winter Soldier program had thousands of them. They all got betrayed, and there's one left. And she's a real badass and ends up getting recruited for the mission. But her thing is a fight with Crossbones, who has the original Bucky's arm. Because the Crossbones is now all robot, and he tracks down these Winter Soldiers to kill them. So they have a tangle, and she proves to be pretty badass. And she's trying to recover her memories, you know, because the Winter Soldier, that's a big part of it. For those unfamiliar, they kind of take away your memories. So she's trying to get those back and going to team up. And they got to get to this and secure the Celestial Garden because everybody is going to fight for it. And the Cabal is offering like a free membership if you can get it. But I just thought it was so funny that if you started with number one, you're going to be pretty bummed that there's almost no Spider-Man 2099. Uh-huh. It really should be like the world of 2099. But I get there were probably like no one's going to buy. Like the Spider-Man character is far and away the most enduring legacy.
Yep. Yeah.
Even though those issues of some of the other ones are really expensive.
Yeah. Really?
But I don't know why. Like there's a point where like those Punisher ones, I think, and the Ghost, they just seem disproportionately. I don't know why they're so pricey. Maybe Kevin, they're just rare, I guess. Kevin, do you know?
I feel like a lot of the 90s, like the print runs are high and then they become low, but not low compared to like nowadays, low compared to the era. So it always seems like on the Marvel books, I don't think it crosses over as much to the distinguished competition, but like those 90s low print run last issues just get unreal. Like the demand is just, or someone's going back there and be like, oh, I want to get that, and you can't find it. It's,
who was the artist on the, was it Ashley Wood
on Ghost Rider 2099? Yeah.
All right, so that may be playing a role in it.
Yeah,
I just feel like it's always the later issues, because any of those series, the earlier issues you can get really cheap.
Oh.
But there just becomes a point where, well, maybe not all.
Spider-Man 2099 number one is no longer that 25-cent book.
Okay. Well, even if get a beat-up copy for a couple bucks or something. But it was just weird that I could assemble these runs pretty easily, you know, paying like a dollar or $2 an issue or something like that. And then it reaches a point where all of them are like, it's now $15, $20 an issue. And I'm like, I don't really want to pay that for what appears to be not a particular crazy, you know, like, is that really a $20 comic? Maybe it is. I'm out of touch with it. It just was funny how all these books kind of reach. And same To go back to a topic everyone's tired of me talking about. Same with the old G.I. Joe. The last 20 or 30 issues of the Marvel G.I. Joe run are all, in my mind, disproportionately expensive for what I'm guessing the issues represent to me. Now, I'm sure some people, those are their favorite issues ever, but there was a weird, I don't know if you're right, Kevin, print runs or those issues just got pulped or bought up in collections that don't move or what, but and well, again, they're not like $1,000, but they're all like paying 20, 30 bucks for just some random issue of a series. It seems weird to me.
But if you have a core, like it you always have the like, oh, this book is popular, or people don't care about this book, or then you have like a core of fans for like a book for something like G.I. Joe. It's like there's definitely, if you want to get in there.
True. It's just funny that there's a point when the run is near its end that like just the prices just go five, 10 times what the issues were before it. And yeah. It's not like it's the artist or some, I think it's just for at some point people stop collecting them or buying them or the print runs or whatever. It makes me funny. But anyways,
Spider-Man. But they're trapped in collections. And then the other stuff that aren't in collections, there were worthless books that people trashed. So how many copies do you have left at that point?
Yeah, that could be it too. Or who's trying to buy it except for weirdos like me?
Exactly. Yeah. And you got to fight other weirdos.
But I liked Fry's work, but I think Wachter does a better job of having kind of the grittiness of 2099. Because it's a real brutal fight between Crossbones and the Winter Soldier 2099. That's really fun. I mean, I know I just said it was gritty and brutal and fun in the same sentence, but you know what I mean. It's comic books. But anyways, I'm on board as long as the store keeps getting these things in. I think it's just like 8-issue series counting the Alpha and Omega. I would suggest getting at least the Alpha. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you can get all these in a dollar bin in a month or two. I don't know if it's popular or not, but I'm having fun with it.
Nice.
We're also in that weird period. I'm like, I wonder if any of these from the last couple of years will become like rare because of other considerations in a few years.
Well, who knows? Maybe this Winter Soldier 2099, I'm betting this is their first appearance.
Oh, I think so. But keep that, Andrew. Bag and board that.
Maybe that's going to make this like a hard to find issue or something like that. But when the Winter Soldier 2099 move, I don't, on the other hand, you know, we've seen that the Spider-Man cartoon sequel is involving the 2099 world. So if Sony leans into it, maybe this is going to be something. I don't know. I don't know how much that impacts things, how much the cartoon movies have been impacting. Like, do they count as first appearances, Kevin? Have you noticed, like, for those characters when they show up? Because obviously Spider-Gwen was already hot, but it would have been her first movie appearance, right? Was that first cartoon movie?
Yes.
When did the movie come out in relation to the cartoon that eventually did something? It's probably around the same time.
Yeah, so I'm like, oh, maybe the cartoon movies count for jacking up prices too. In which case, I mean, maybe we'll see a Winter Soldier 2099.
I don't think the cartoons have as big of an effect on things.
Because I know people, I enjoyed that movie, but I know a ton of people are like, it's my favorite superhero movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's an age where that hit with the style and the colors and the moving images.
Well, it's funny, comparing that cartoon movie to the, like, that third Spider-Man movie. Like, I much prefer that cartoon movie as a true team up of Spider-Man's rather than the like that I feel like that one's, although they have weird stuff with Peter Parker, I feel like that one's forward thinking, where the other Spider-Man movie is like nostalgic.
It just looked back, Kevin. It just looked back.
Yeah, I know. Like you can do both, but I don't know. Like I much prefer the other one.
Yeah, it's just fast. Like the whole, what's the role of comic books going forward is interesting to me as far as we see, like I said, the weird kind of some books just shoot up in value for some weird first appearance and stuff.
Is this... Well, the Moon Knight legitimately have Stephen Platt on those last issues there too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like that, I'm not knocking all that stuff, but I just don't know. Is this just a little blip in time now, and it's in not. 10 years it'll be something, or is this like how it's going to go? Has it crossed over? Like some things, like vintage Star Wars now is. I don't know if that will ever. I mean, it'll go up and down, but I don't know if they'll ever be like junk. Any, you know what I mean? Like, oh no, yeah. No, that stuff's worth it. Like, I think the market is big enough, and it's been around long enough that kind of like Golden Age comics. Like, there's just only so many of them. They're around, even though there aren't as many Golden Age fans, I would guess.
Let's head back to the realm of the Hulk, because I read the 2-issue Jim Rugg Hulk Grand Design series.
You know,
so
what
is
I'm
it
waiting
over
for
now,
Steve?
The Grand Design? I mean, how many, or they can find more people from Pittsburgh?
I think they can find more people, but
okay.
I'm waiting for those. I love that they always put those out in the treasury size. I'm like, sorry, boys, I'm not buying the floppies. I'm waiting for the. you ruined me. You spoil me with those big treasuries. So, Steve, do I need this in treasury size?
I don't know. It is. It's a. You know, it depends on. You know what? It would be great in treasury size. There's some really fun design elements to the book where there are pages that are mocked up to look like they're pages of original art, like from an artist's edition. There are pages that look like they are drawn by Jim Rugg as a teenager on a piece of loose leaf paper with the tools he might have had available to him, like in his classroom. There's big splash pages with interesting design elements and using different, you know, references to different media, like the TV shows and stuff like that, that are like mid-issue, that I think there's stuff that will just design-wise look really cool, big. So yeah, I do think it would be good. You know, and if you're familiar with the Grand Design thing, it is looking back at a character's publishing history and trying to turn sometimes years of publishing into just like one panel and a caption box as it rolls through the character's crazy history, and you get to see some of the ups and downs. But I thought it was fun to track the memorable and not even necessarily good moments from the Hulk's publishing history. The first issue was Monster, 38 pages, and it went from issue 1 to 300. So that's only like the first 20 years of the Hulk. It really also reminded me how much I really love the first 6-issue series. That's the Ditko and Kirby and Toad Men and stuff, Andrew. Those issues are
great.
The
Metal Master.
Totally. Love that stuff. And the Hulk's ad during that time and everything. But
you know, I think this one might be the least crazy of the three.
Yeah. At times it has, you know, it shows the creation of some of the supporting cast that came out of the Hulk's world, like Doc Samson and even the She-Hulk. They make references to the 70s TV show, the 80s cartoon that was around the same time as Amazing Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends there. And they even reference the newspaper strip and the Rampaging Hulk black and white Marvel magazine, which is fun. There's a Shelton-esque panel with the Freak Brothers in it, Andrew.
I like to hear that.
It's really funny. And there are so many panels where it sums up like a interaction that the Hulk had with another character or a battle, a confrontation that a Hulk had with another character as just showing the other character, like, totally trashed, like a whole bunch of Hydra dudes, like, broken and bleeding on the ground, or, like, he mentions, like, and then Hulk had to save Betty Ross from Bullseye, and it just shows the Hulk talking to Betty Ross. And in the background, you just see, like, it's like the Wicked Witch's feet coming out from under Dorothy's house, and it's like the Boomerang's feet coming off from off panel, and a little Boomerang laying there that just shows, like, this wasn't a match at all. There's some real fun elements in it, not just design-wise, but just for some of the things that he chooses to show. I mean, it's hard also to realize until you see it in a big picture like this, like how many times Banner had been cured and then chose to re-irradiate himself and become the Hulk again.
They do love that bit, don't they, where you're like, I gotta do it. No, yes, I'm back to it.
Now it's my choice. Before it was my curse, now it's my choice, you know?
Is that like Xavier and his legs? I know I have my legs again, but...
Well, how many times has the Thing been cured? And I think they just dropped it eventually, of like, he spent as much time as Ben as he can.
The first 300 issues, if you remember, in the Hulk 2, and then this issue also ends with that of the Hulk being... like smart and soft-faced and gaining amnesty for all the Hulk's past deeds and being loved and getting a parade and then slowly going downhill, like the little corner box showed of him, like, not able to hold the test tubes anymore and raging out of his lab coat. And
this is Smash Tales?
Then everyone faced off against the Hulk in issue 300, and Doctor Strange exiled him to another dimension.
For the first time.
So then the second issue is Madness, where the first one was Monster. The second one's 39 pages, and it goes from the Hulk being at the interdimensional crossroads in 301 all the way to the end of Peter David and Paul Jenkins' runs, which is just before the Byrne Garney stuff, not Byrne drawn, but Byrne written with Ron Garney art, and then Bruce Jones, John Romita Jr., and then Mike Diodato stuff, which I really liked a lot with the Mr. Green and all that stuff. That stuff wasn't included. Although then they jump forward and have this four-page epilogue to be able to reference the Planet Hulk and World War Hulk stuff.
Yeah.
But in this volume, the second volume, you really realize, too, that the Hulk story has also been, like, the leader's story, too. That he, from his origin and all his different incarnations and how many times he's died and been resurrected, and they don't even get to, like, the Red Leader stuff that comes down the line. But this issue had the Gray Hulk, you know, Joe Fixit and everything, and then the Smart Hulk with the Pantheon, all the Peter David stuff, the Maestro and the Future Imperfect. It was good, though. I enjoyed it a lot to kind of revisit the Hulk's kooky path through what they've called his, life in the Marvel Universe.
Let me guess, the Defender stuff is like half a page.
Yep, they mentioned the Defender. Yeah.
I always love how, like you say, like they'll take a whole chunk of things and just be like, yeah, we're just gonna put it in this little tiny baby bit.
He ate beans.
It works, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's the nice thing about the Hulk, though, I feel like, for being one of the Marvel characters, he really wasn't as, he didn't have that, like, Hulk 2-in-1 or Hulk team up or Hulk this or Hulk, like he wasn't at, it's not like you're doing Spider, like he didn't have, like, yeah, he was in the Defenders and a few other groups, but he wasn't as into so many other things that some of the other key first characters been in.
Yeah, he didn't have like a side job or a hobby or anything.
Yeah, so I feel like, oh, it's nice that it must have been easier than like that X-Men one or whatever, where you're like,
yeah,
how does this even make sense? And same with the Fantastic Four, like the Thing could have his entire own grand design with the two-in-ones and all the other stuff he appeared in.
Sure.
You know what else was good?
Tell me, no. Tell me.
X-Men 92, House of 1992 by Steve, is it Foxy or Fox? I'll go with Foxy. And drawn by Selva Espin. This is a whole take on merging like the Krakoa Hickman X-Men stuff with a feeling of everything going on in the cartoon, which leads to some pretty hilarious things where I'm just going, oh, of course. There'll be a reference to something, and then you'll be like, oh, and Master Mold is in space. And I'm like, yeah, that tracks. That makes sense. So, I mean, I had a lot of fun with a lot of things. And then they like reference, oh, well, we're all sad about this character dying. And I'm like, oh, is this supposed to be like the Moira thing or whatever? A lot of that going on, but still a lot of clever twists on all that stuff. Because you got to use all the characters from the cartoon. You don't want to be throwing in some random dude from, I don't know, 2011 or whatever. So you got to change a few things up here and there. Make sure that you know, the X-Men are immortal and all that stuff.
So, in other words, we get a lot of Jubilee is what you're saying.
Yes, and you get like this like double page spread that's like, it totally looks like one of those ads from like the 90s. I mean, there's a couple moments where I'm like a Game Boy Advance is here or something. I'm like, yeah, I guess they were pulling from like right at the end of the cartoon at this point, because I thought they would maybe just have a, like, it is 1992, but I mean the cartoon went for several years, so you can pull from all these different things. So yeah, it was fun and exciting, and I definitely want to read more of where they go with this, because they have to come to an end, right? So I'm not sure how that's gonna play out. Like, are they gonna come to an end like the cartoon came to an end, or are they gonna give like an alternate twist to? Like, are they going to, I wonder if they're going to like end it sort of like that, like some future thing that we saw in the whole Powers of House of stuff.
You know how the cartoon ended for me? They stopped like showing it consistently and started maybe showing things like out of order or at different times or... And I was just like, it just lost track of where it was, and it was weird.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised, and maybe they don't coordinate this, but you know they're doing a new sequel cartoon on Disney Plus, yeah. X-Men 97. So I wonder if they're going to try and go through and leave it so that you'll be like, and go check out the cart, you know, on Disney Plus, see the X-Men 97. And then maybe start a new title, X-Men 90. You know,
it
just seems like they could maybe leverage this into something. I mean, how is it? Does it feel like okay for all ages? I read one of these a while ago, and I don't remember.
Kevin? I don't think there's anything like super mature. At least I don't remember. Like, it moves pretty fast. Like, Wolverine has his claws out and everything, but I don't think he's like shredding dudes left or right and everything.
Okay, good. I didn't remember, and I was like, boy, I wonder how, if that's going to work or not, because that way it would be a nice entree to have, because obviously people in their 30s and 40s have nostalgia from the show on, so they'll get those people, but if they can make it also for younger people, it would be nice to have a bridge show that like, oh, the old fans like it and the new fans like it, as opposed to just being for the olds. I don't know.
I just think it's wild that in the 90s, Marvel had two X-Men animated series comics. Like they had three volumes of adapting the cartoon, and then they had the Japanese one. So it's like you can read the adaption from two different countries type of thing. It's like wild. So I literally had like the two comics out, and I was like, well, what does Cable do here? And what does he do there? Like, you can just see the artistic choices being made and then watch the cartoon at the same time. Like, unreal.
John Herbert drew a bunch of those issues that were adaptations of the show, and he's local to me up here. He's a fireman in one of the towns south of us here in upstate New York, and I see him at the local Albany show that we have quite regularly. Nice guy.
And I can only mention one more bit. There's a bit, Rogue's not supposed to touch anyone, but since the X-Men are immortal, Gambit's is like, oh, come on, Rogue. We gotta make more mutants, and I can't die. Even though if I die kissing you, Rogue, you can just bring me back to life because we're immortal now. It's so terrible, but it's true.
So maybe it's not all for kids, Andrew.
It's just such a hilarious bit, though. It's like, yeah, that's true, because Rogue was like, oh, if you kiss me, you'll die. And he says, yeah, I'll die, true, but then I can just come back
But
to
man, it'll be worth
I know.
it.
I'm like, that is so bad.
Listen, kissing can kill you.
Oh, I'll die 50 times for you, Rogue. Oh.
Did you guys? I picked up the Savage Avengers. Did you guys grab it?
No.
I like David P. Poise. For those of us that listen to the sister show, he did the Spencer and Luck books with Action Lab. I think they were Phil's favorites, and I read them too. And then I backed the first issue of the OZ, which was an Dorothy in Wonderland and Oz and all that, which came out through Kickstarter. Maybe it has a publisher too, but I got the first issue on Kickstarter. So I was like, oh, I like Peepoy, so let's check out Savage Avengers, you know? He's the writer, by the way. He's joined by the art team of Carlos Magno and Espen Grunterjern. Sorry to our Scandinavian listeners. And it's a setup of just like, why don't we pick the goofy Avengers? You know, the Wolverine Hulk, Weapon H guy, the anti-Venom, Flash Thompson, the Lady Daredevil, the who looks to be a version of the 2099 Black Knight. He's not, but the spiked armor and faceplate makes him look like he's from the 2099 faceplate. Conan and Steve, your favorite. I know that's why you bought the thing.
Yep. Deathlock.
Deathlock's getting lots of play.
Yeah.
What they're
So
doing is
he's.
this, the Savage Avengers, it feels like it's become like the secret defenders from the 90s when Doctor Strange would assemble any team that he needed for
Yeah.
the. As long as they're savage, Kevin.
Yeah, so
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
goofy. I mean, the last two members, I really don't. I like the characters, but I think they're not great here, and it's Cloak and Dagger.
Right.
I wasn't super like I feel like they don't really fit with the team. I don't like the characterization. I never like the ones where they're pining for each other. I always like the ones where they're kind of a team and less about like, oh baby, you're the only one for me sort of bit. But I get it, you know, that they're always the will they, won't they is too much of a lure, I think, for a lot of writers to leave behind. So they're the ones that I'm less like the Weapon H one. That guy makes me laugh. Like, we'll
I
take the
know.
Hulk and Wolverine. Like, it's such a
I know.
funny, crass kind of mix up. I'll never not love it. But anyways, Deathlok is trying to fix things. You know, they're the new time police authority for Marvel, and obviously Conan is a bit of a problem for that. So that's starting the initial
Dang right.
conflict. And what I do like about issue one, hey guys, guess what? They get what appears to be the whole team together in one issue. I mean, they
Oh
split them
no.
apart, but We don't have, like, the first issue, it's Cloak and Dagger and Daredevil. And then the second, you know, like, they really, P-Boys works to get these guys together fast. I was very happy for that. I want, with these kind of characters, you want them banging heads immediately. Their over-the-top nature is what sells them. So, I don't really buy that Deathlok and Conan are a fair match. Because wouldn't Deathlok just shoot them from, like, half a mile away? Yeah. Like, they don't... Mm. Like, this whole, like, I'm gonna go get up close to Conan just seems like I don't have a tactical computer, but it would be like, dude, this guy's got a sword. You have a laser cannon that must shoot, like, 5 miles away. Just go, like...
Deathlok could step on Conan's foot and hold him in place and then just pummel him to death. I mean, come on, it's Deathlok, for Pete's sake.
So that part was a little like, oh, I want to do hand-to-hand with Conan. Why? You have a giant laser gun. Just shoot him from the next county over. Like, it's not like a bow, and like, you can shoot a long ways. But anyways, all the different characters rumble into each other. I was not aware of sort of emo 2099 Black Knight design.
Yeah.
I kind of don't like, I wish it was a different Black. Like, I like Dane, and I know he's had a lot of problems, but I would have been happy with, like, hey, it's Bill, the new Black, you know, kind of.
Yeah, they almost did that. They killed in this, that last Black Knight series. It was really bad. Really bad.
Because, you know, maybe he just lent the sword, like, something else. Because, I mean, the design is fine, but it just doesn't feel like him at all. Yep. But it's very with the metal savage look, so I'm down with that. And the Lady Daredevil, I like the weird kind of just having the red as, like, accent pieces under a black outfit. Mm-hmm. Like, that works for me. And Anti-Venom is fine. I mean, I liked his series, so why wouldn't I like him? And so putting them all together, and then it ends with, you know, so they all get together, have the fight. Deathlok zaps a bunch of them, and where they zap them is into time. So we end with at least one of the crews is going to be Anti-Venom, Conan, and Dagger back in the Hyborian Age. And I'm like, the other reason I had to buy this is I'm like, dude, how are the rights to reprint this going to work? Yeah.
Right.
When Conan moves on somewhere, like, well, I want to jump on this. Maybe they make agreements that it'll work out, or they have some way for it. But I'm like, why? Like, this is dumb superhero fun that's going to be crazy over the top.
So it was just a few episodes ago that I was complaining about Marvel's handling of the Conan license, right? That it's like, you know, we had this kind of good thing at the beginning, and then and now it's barely ever in previews, and it seems like they're doing nothing. And then between that then and now, we've heard that Marvel is losing the Conan license. So that was quick. And I guess they want to put out their own comics, Conan LTD or whatever, and they are, so Marvel's lose Conan, but he can stay in Savage Avengers is basically the bottom line. And it's like, what, you're gonna take the good stuff and leave Savage Avengers? So they're gonna still allow him to be in Savage Avengers, they're still gonna allow Marvel to reprint Conan stuff and reprint their Conan work and keep that stuff published. So yes, it'll all be part of the agreement, because now they know that these things are a problem down the line, right?
Yeah. So it's funny.
Even if they have the reprint rights, I don't know how invested Marvel is going to be in
absolutely
keeping that stuff going, since they're technically promoting someone else too. I mean, a Blaze puts out their own Conan stuff too, but not under Conan.
Well, no. Yeah, but Marvel's been putting out a lot of stuff, like the omnibuses of the series and the Savage Sword and all that. They just have to finish that stuff up.
Some of that early stuff went long out of print though, pretty fast.
But I also understand, if I'm a license holder, I actually think moving your property makes sense, because it generates a lot of news, a lot of excitement. People that miss stuff or out of print or like that publisher or whatever, buy it. But it's got to be a downward slope. You know what I mean? At some point. So I would see how yeah, every 5 years we just drop it somewhere new, gin up a bunch of free press and excitement and titles, and then as the interest wanes, we move it somewhere else or take it in-house, because you know they probably feel they can do it cheaper. And at this point, they must realize, look, comics sell whatever they sell, and unless we get turn Conan into Batman, it's going to always start out and kind of go down to whatever level it's at. Well, if we reduce the cost of producing it, then we're going to make more money on the back end of it. You know what I mean? Like, we used Marvel to generate the press. They're doing these wonderful trade editions. It's got, like I said, all the free news coverage. Now we take that energy and use it ourselves.
That read the Jim Zub run, too, and realized that he had a whole other 2 years planned for the character and said, I think we can do this ourselves. The problem with that overseas stuff that you're talking about, the Ablaze, is that over in Europe, Conan's public domain now.
Yes, yes.
So they can't do anything about it from the overseas stuff.
But we can still get it, which is cool.
Good to have your hand in the pockets of Disney, because if anyone can keep extending U.S. intellectual property law, it's going to be Disney. They're going to work. I mean, Mickey's coming back up again, so they got to step on that. And a big ad for the new Genis Vell Captain Marvel series, which I know you guys love, so that's coming back. They put that in the Savage Avengers comic, and I know you guys must be very excited. Because for you, that's your Captain Marvel.
I was buying a bunch of those. I was feeling it, like all these sort of retro or not so retro, but kind of giving all these guys limited series, and I paused at that one.
What?
Because I'm like,
I thought you love Captain Marvel. This is your Captain Marvel.
I want to reread those.
I'm curious. David's.
I mean, but come on, like, when that Starlin thing came out, were you even alive? Like, I think that came out a long time ago.
What's Starlin? That Genis Vell is from Ron Mars.
Right, but the Captain Marvel character name would have went back to the Death of Captain Marvel graphic novel. And that came out, in the 83 or something, 82, 79? I got a computer, I can look it up.
So, I also read something that we talked about beforehand, Kevin, like you're saying, oh, they're making some of these different retro titles and things, and the other thing that we've discussed before is all these black, white, and red books, right? Or black, white, and another color.
Yeah.
And it's finally Moon Knight's turn. And the first issue had three stories. The first one was a very impressive creative team. Hickman and Chris Bacalo? Or Bacalo?
That sounds good.
But in true Bacalo form, it was really hard to follow visually, and the story wasn't any clearer. Like, it was really hard to follow conceptually, but there was like a red balloon that kind of carried through it. I can pretty much confidently tell you.
Okay.
Then the second story was a team up with Spider-Man. So he's the red element. Right, and so that was kind of neat.
Oh, that's smart. Because I was thinking, shouldn't it be black, white, and yellow? Because a moon.
And this one was written by Merwa Aodel, and with art by Doton Akande, who had really sharp artwork, like the gray tones and the backgrounds. It's told at night, but everything's white. But Spidey's red, and it's really very sharp visually. It's the best looking thing in the book. And then the third story is Mr. Knight taking on a case that then Moon Knight has to, like pay the bill for the check that Mr. Knight wrote. Basically, Moon Knight has to protect this mob trial witness to like make it to the next day when the trial is, that kind of thing. And there's this blood drawing villain, Red Blade, who has the red and the blood has the red. So there you go. Oh, and the Wrecking Crew's bulldozer shows up too, trying to stop them. And this one's written by Mark Guggenheim with art by Jorge Fornes. So it was a pretty good first outing. The stinker of the bunch was the Hickman Bacallo, but you have to give it cred just because of that creative team. So
yeah.
I'd say it was a pretty good first outing for Moon Knight Black, White, and Red.
I have another book that uses red in the title.
X-Men Red?
Yes. Which you can pretty much just say it's Sword. I mean, this is the direct continuation of that Al Ewing series with Caselli on artwork.
Yep.
And if you don't like Storm, maybe you're not going to be reading this book. I know there's some people that don't like Storm, but they have an interesting status quo set up on Mars there.
She's a pretty important part of the act. It's not like it's like if you don't like, you know, some rare guy, Toad or whatever you want. I mean, Storm's been pretty key to the X-Men.
Yeah. How about if you don't like how they're handling Storm?
There you go.
I don't know. I feel like there's some prominent people that dislike Storm. It's like there's certain characters, it's like people don't care about those characters, or people don't like certain characters.
I mean, she was the leader of the team for a long, long, like, that's like I said, if you were like, I don't really like Mimic, well, okay, I think you're pretty safe for most part, but.
When she was the leader, she had the mohawk.
Yeah, awesome mohawk. I guess it's kind of like how Ben Reilly, I'm always suspicious and go, oh no, we're going to get another Ben Reilly story. I guess it's like that. It's just, I never warm up to like Ben Reilly or Doc and Doke and Drake and whatever his name is.
That's my problem with this series. I really like the first issue, but I really don't like the third Summers brother retcon thing.
Yeah,
I like to think there's an X-Men writer's manual where they're like, okay, if you're in trouble, you can always gin up a new Summers brother. Like,
Vulcan, that's it, Vulcan. Oh, you were talking about the other, the Dokken, but I'm thinking Vulcan.
I can't. Write yourself in a corner. Remember, on the plane, there was another one they forgot about and left him home, and so.
And there was a sister. A sister!
No, I'm interested in, I'm definitely interested in the politics and in the culture of all the Araco craziness, and like that has to go somewhere, right? Like how is that? I just don't know how part of that is going to play out. So I'm definitely fascinated. And then they have the whole thing with Magneto, who gets part of this book, and then he creates this like whole place for him. Self to live.
Asteroid M.
No, that's the other guy. But they have all these different characters that are now on the planet, and I'm like, I gotta say, I'm really interested in where all this stuff is going. So, I mean, I really can't complain. And then you get the whole little thing teaser at the end, and I'm like, oh ho ho. So I'm definitely on board.
Yeah, it's Al Ewing. You know that's going to be well written, and that there's a story to be told if Ewing's at the helm. Any others, boys?
I got two more. Maybe I'll just do a quick hits here.
All right, fire away. All right,
you have the continuation of Excalibur. I just realized all three of these are basically the continuation. I guess Excalibur book is kind of no more.
Right.
And this isn't, it has some of the same characters, but it's moved into what it became at the end of Excalibur. And I feel like the other books that continued their numbering, they're still sort of their books. Like X-Force is still X-Force. New Mutants is still New Mutants. But this is like the next phase of Excalibur is the Knights of X, which still has Teeny Howard writing. But now we got Bob Quinn. It was pretty awesome at drawing the crazy landscapes and everything that we have here now, because they're kind of stuck in this other world where mutants get that other world. That's clever, right? where mutants are always being hunted. I mean, I feel like it's always, like, part of my interest is I never read a lot of those old Excalibur issues. And I just remember some characters from the X-Men trading cards. And I don't feel like they've been back that often. Like, maybe War Wolves or whatever will show up. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's from those cards. So, I mean, there's some nice. Of that where I'm like, I'm still curious about that. And they're still using all, like, that whole map of all the different places of Otherworld.
I thought you were going to say that they were being hunted by Eternals. And that it's all leading to the new, you know, it all comes circle. It's all circular.
Now this is has to do with the whole Avalon, Merlin.
Yeah. Saturnine.
All that goodness. So.
Which was left in disarray after the whole crossover, what was it, Sword of X? Swords of X?
Yeah, right? Like that sort of left a bunch of stuff in ruin, and then they had the whole thing about
the Citadel.
Originally, Britain was like fine with the mutants, but now they cast the mutants out.
But like the Citadel was being attacked and overthrown and all that stuff, and there was a lot going on. King Arthur
So it seems like this could be another like 25 issue arc or whatever. Because I definitely have like a quest and a mission and stuff they're trying to complete in here. So, I mean, if you like Excalibur, I would say read this book.
You heard it here first.
Exactly.
All right, bring us home,
Kevin. I thought
Kevin.
You would cover this one in more in-depth, Super Steve. The Marauders book.
Hmm.
You know, I don't think I didn't get an annual. So, much like the buying that alpha, the $29.99 alpha, and then you have the first issue, I feel like that annual was issue one.
Yeah.
But this is by Steve Orlando, who I believe introduced a $29.99 character or team that I'm not super familiar with in that annual. I think was it Brimstone Love or?
Okay.
I think that was an X-Men $29.99. type of thing. Like, I have some issues of X-Men 2099, but I don't know if I read that or don't remember that. Maybe I didn't have the proper issues. But that's something went on in the annual, and like they'll reference it here. Not that it's detrimental to the story, but you're acutely aware that you missed an issue. But this is the first issue, and then the team is here, and it's you're not waiting six issues to get the team together. Like, the team is here. They've already done some stuff.
They've had a whole nother series, for Pete's sake.
I know. Yeah. So, I mean, and the team is pretty wild. Because Kate is, like, gathering people together, and you're like, oh, I don't know if... Well, it also plays off of, remember the other X-Men Red? It was Azarar and Tom Taylor, and that had Cassandra Nova in it.
Yep.
Well, this other series also has Cassandra Nova in it, so there's like that weird link there, and then you're like, oh no, why would you ever, why aren't they in the hole, right? Like with Sabretooth. I mean, you gotta give everyone a second chance. But everything she says is, Dom's like, hey, did you know that if you dig deep enough, you can find organs and everything, and you're like, what are you doing? Like, you're cutting organs out of the island? It just seems very strange. But I also, like, there's a new team here, but I also feel like it's not everyone left the Marauders. Like, I feel like the previous series ended and people were just like, well, I'm going to go on vacation, or I'm going to go traveling, or I have to go on a book tour or something. So I feel like those characters could be integrated back into this book. But I mean, I like Tempo and like all these other like random characters that are sort of here. But you have a like this mystery box too that Kate has. It's like, how can you have a mystery box from like, is it 2 million years ago? Something like that. So I'm also thinking of like that Avengers team, like 1 million BC. I'm kind of wondering if that's going to be some kind of connective tissue thing. Or, because they say, oh, it's not going to be an apocalypse thing. So you immediately think it's going to be an apocalypse thing. I don't know. That's the mystery of the book. So we'll see how that goes, anyways.
Yeah, I
And then
wasn't.
they launch into outer space.
That can often be
I'm,
fun, X-Men in
yeah.
space.
Yeah. I mean, they even make reference to, like, why do we ever bother going to space? Like, horrible things always happen in space. And it's true.
Why do we ever go to the Savage Land? We always crash when we go to the Savage Land.
Exactly. As soon as someone's stuck in the Savage Land, they'd be just like, we're not going there. So yeah, more Shi'ar intrigue possible. So
Yeah,
I'm excited.
I wasn't a fan of the issue, actually. I visually, it was a little too on the manga face side of things.
I was gonna mention that. Good that you said that, because the first few issues, I can't really tell the whole manga influence. And then the first time you get a close up of like Kate's face, I'm like, we're totally into that stereotypical manga girl face thing. Like, it's not as evident in other places, but yeah, it really sticks out at times.
And when you see the villain at the reveal at the end of the first issue, it's one of those things where it's like the bottom of him is wider than the top of him, like where your ankles and legs should taper and get smaller. He's kind of wider there to, it just has that anime, I should say, influence in a lot of the design, which is fine. The artist is inspired from that. The spaceship design, it looks like the Yamato from Star Blazers, for Pete's sake. If you made it a silhouette, it would totally look like the Yamato. But yeah, it just wasn't for me. And I Steve Orlando's a friend. I like him very much, but the yeah, it wasn't I wasn't digging this.
That reminds me of getting a sketch of Star Lord and someone saying, "This Guardians of the Galaxy Star Lord, this looks exactly like insert anime. The helmet, it looked totally looks like that thing." And I was like, I had no idea.
Funny.
Then he's showing, like, sort of showing around this Guardians of the Galaxy, and then like one of the artists for Guardians of the Galaxy happened to be sitting beside him. It was a weird confluence of events that day, but
Oops.
entertaining nonetheless.
All right. Why don't we wrap things up there for this episode? Next episode is my 14th anniversary of doing this show. And to start off my 15th year podcasting here on Marvel Noise, we are going to hit a series, or an arc, I should say, that we've talked about doing for months and months because it ties up the loose ends of the Moon Knight material that we've covered recently and touches upon lots of threads that we've hit covering the New Warriors. And that is the Round Robin Sidekicks Revenge arc from Amazing Spider-Man, the bi-weekly event from the early 90s.
Yeah, I expect some 90s to show up in there.
Should be fun. All right, thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate you. Until Marvel loses the Conan, no.
What?
until Professor X parts his hair on the side. Make mine Marvel. Later. I got you there for a second.
He can do that, right? Like, if he's comes out of the egg, he could have a full head of hair again. He just chooses not to.
Got a lot of hair on his back, I hear.
Was a lot of books.
It was a lot of
Yeah.
books.